Good evening, and welcome to this evening's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Karen Kiefer, a member of the club's International Relations member-led forum and your chair for this evening's program. We welcome NorCal Peace Corps Association members who are partnering with us on this evening's program. We also welcome our listeners on the radio, and we invite our audience to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. Dr. Michael H. Abkin is Director of Organizational Development and Operations of the National Peace Academy. He previously served as Director of Operations at Peace Partnership International, and before that, as Special Projects Coordinator for the Peace Alliance and its campaign for U.S. Department of Peace. All sounds pretty peaceful, huh? In his former academic and private sector technical career, Mike applied systems analysis and simulation modeling for international agricultural development and air transportation. The two sort of go together, land and air. These included projects that took him to Nigeria, Korea, Austria, and Venezuela. Then at the Foundation for Global Community, Mike designed and facilitated courses related to personal and cultural transformation and sustainability, developed a vocational training program in Afghanistan, and was project manager for the Foundation's program at the 2004 Parliament of the World's Religions in Barcelona. Mike taught high school French and mathematics with Peace Corps in Nigeria, and has volunteered at home with local nonprofits, city government, and political movements. We now welcome Dr. Abkin to the podium to tell us more about the new National Peace Academy.
Is this on okay? Yeah. Well, I'm really pleased that so many of you came out tonight with the other events going on a few blocks away from here. And so I'm pleased you're here to hear about the National Peace Academy. Finally, a U.S. National Peace Academy. And the word finally implies a long history. And indeed, there is a long history, which I will go into afterwards if you ask a question about it. But that's not part of what I want to talk about necessarily initially. Let's start with the word peace. Let's go each one of those words, National Peace Academy. And so each one of those has some meaning behind it and why we're carefully using those words and what we mean by them. Peace means something different to so many different people. Probably everybody in this room, if you said, what does peace mean, would have a very different answer. So let's be clear about what we mean by it at the National Peace Academy. And we start with this quote from Lao Tse, who says, if there is to be peace in the world, there must be peace in the nations. If there is to be peace in the nations, there must be peace in the cities. If there is to be peace in the cities, there must be peace between neighbors. If there is to be peace between neighbors, there must be peace in the home. If there is to be peace in the home, there must be peace in the heart. So peace at all these levels is really critical. We need all of that. It's much more than treaties between nations. When we had our design summit last March, which is what we kind of mark as the beginning of the National Peace Academy, somebody brought to us this definition of peace that's in the Earth Charter. And the Earth Charter defines peace as peace is the wholeness. And I highlighted those words because they really mean something special. Peace is a wholeness. Think of that, a wholeness created by right relationships. A wholeness created by right relationships with oneself, other persons, other cultures, other life, earth, and the larger whole of which all are a part. So it's clear that it's a matter of right relationships, and it's a matter of all those levels, all those things are part of what makes the wholeness that is peace. And when we saw that definition, we said, that's it. That's what we're about at the National Peace Academy. And so we've used that now in our literature and our website, and we talk about what do we mean by peace. All right, what about national? President Obama gave this statement, when he was accepting the Nobel Peace Prize outside the White House last week. And he says, "And that is why I will accept this award as a call to action, a call for all nations to confront the common challenges of the 21st century. And that's why my administration's worked to establish a new era of engagement in which all nations must take responsibility for the world we seek." So what I want to point out about this statement is the idea of he's talking to nations and people within nations, and he's talking about taking responsibility. So those are also critical issues. And when we talk about national, it's the responsibility that nations have, and we're focusing on the United States, and we'll get more into that in a moment. So we say peace begins, and this is almost so commonplace now, it's almost trite. Peace begins with you. Peace begins with me. Peace begins inside, with the individual, with the family, with the clan, with the community, with the nation. That's where it has to start, and out, and it goes out from there. And it extends out to other individuals, from an individual to other individuals, from within a family to other families, from within a community to other communities, and so on. So peace is this rippling out of these right relationships, if you will. The United States, at the national level, I can use this thing, the national level, the United States is a leader in the world. We recognize that. We have many reasons for that, which I don't need to go into here, but I think you recognize that. So this leadership, what President Obama is introducing into this, and why I think was behind the Nobel Committee awarding him the prize, was this, it's a kind of leadership that's not, how should I say, unilateral. It's not saying we know best for everybody else. It's a leadership of shared leadership, where everybody, all nations, all people, have some share, some responsibility in taking this leadership, and it's a shared responsibility. And the spirit of listening and cooperation, which is something that President Obama has demonstrated and trying to instill. I think it takes a while, but he's getting there. I think people are getting that message. So it's that kind of leadership that we're talking about. The National Peace Academy is part of a global network in that same sense of peace academies all over the world. There are peace academies in other countries at various scope of operations, various levels. Costa Rica has an academy for peace. A new one was established in Switzerland recently called the World Peace Academy. Many places called peace academies, and many other organizations and programs that may not use that name but are functioning in that way. And so what we see this as a, and it's important that, and this came up to some discussion at our design summit last March. Should we be a national peace, or even the year before at the vision meeting, should this be a national peace academy or a global peace academy? Why just national? Why just the United States? And the argument that finally won out, if you will, was that we have a lot of work to do here at home about peace and bringing peace to ourselves. And so let's start there and focus on that. And then you think of other countries, and we can envision a network, like I say, of peace academies all over the world, each nation having its own that has the peace academy that addresses issues of violence and of peace within its own historical and cultural context. We can't presume to know what peace should be and how it should be practiced in other countries. Each country needs to do that for itself. So this is kind of the vision we're holding out for going forward. So academy. Well, academy implies a number of things to different people, the academy having to do with education and learning. President Arias of Costa Rica has this quote on his website. He has the Arias Foundation, and he has this quote that says, "Because my land is a land of teachers, we close the barracks, and our children march with books under their arms, not with rifles on their shoulders. We repudiate violence." Another Nobel Peace Prize winner. And I'll mention later, we just came from Costa Rica last month where he signed legislation creating a Ministry of Justice and Peace in Costa Rica, the third such ministry in the world. Maria Montessori says, "Establishing lasting peace is the work of education." So here we are with an academy. So we have a National Peace Academy. So the National Peace Academy we're talking about, it's college level, transdisciplinary definitely. Peace needs to exist everywhere. You can't put these silos on them and be disciplinary. So it's very transdisciplinary. It's not even multidisciplinary. It's transdisciplinary. It's a learning institution. So it's an institution of learning, but it's also a learning institution. A very critical part of our purpose, as we'll see in a moment, is embodying and reflecting the principles and processes of peace as an organization in everything we do, internally, how we relate to one another, and externally, how we relate to our partners, our cooperators in our programs. And so those principles and processes of peace are an important part of who we are, our DNA, if you will, as an organization. And so as a learning institution, we're always in a process of self-evaluation, seeing how we're doing with respect to actually practicing the principles of and implementing the processes of peace and principles of peace. And as the changing environment around us, the world is changing always, we need to be a learning institution saying, how do we also need to change? What other programs, ways of operating, kinds of partners that we have as we go forward? So we're always, the self-evaluation is an ongoing process. We have four cornerstones of peace learning, four areas that we focus on in our programs. One is peace education, peace research, peace policy. And so we're not just ivory tower. Peace policy is an important part of it, looking out at the national, state, local, even international levels. What are the policy needs to institute a culture of peace? And then peace practice. People are out in the field doing peace work, peace building all over the world, and we recognize that, and we want to be involved in that and contribute to that in the ways, best ways we can. So with all that, then the purpose statement for the National Peace Academy, well, we have... we're about change. The National Peace is obviously about change, not just because that's the president's watchword, but that's what we're about. If we're going to have a culture of peace in the world, move from a culture of violence to a culture of peace, a lot of change involved in that. We talked about worldview earlier. It's down at that level, which we can talk about later if you'd like to get into that. Mahatma Gandhi said, as human beings, our greatness lies not so much in being able to remake the world, as in being able to remake ourselves. Again, that's where we have to start, with ourselves. Buckminster Fuller, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, you build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. So we're about building new systems, new educational processes, researching and through policy and so on, building new systems. And leave it to others who have those inclinations to try and tear down the old ones. But when they're torn down, we'll be ready with something new. And Peter Drucker from the World of Business, and business is an important partner of what we're doing as well, and has a lot to offer in bringing about a world of peace, culture of peace. Peter Drucker says, the task of leadership is to create an alignment of strengths, making a system's weaknesses irrelevant. So that's what we're about, is lining up our strengths. So our purpose is threefold, to develop the full spectrum of the peace builder, inner and outer, what we are inside and how we relate outside that spectrum, and personal and professional, so that what you do throughout your life, in your own personal life, your personal comportment, your family, your friends, your church, and professional in your professional career, your job, whatever you're doing, you do through the eyes of peace. This is why transdisciplinary is so important. That everybody, again, our dream, our vision is that every department across the university would have whatever they do in every course, not just a special course on peace and check that one off. Everything is done through the eyes of peace and how it contributes to peace in whatever profession. Even Joe the plumber could be a peace builder, I'm sure. And secondly is development of peace systems. So we're developing the peace builder and development of peace systems. So local to global, and by systems we mean when you're changing a worldview, everything's going to change. Everything in your economic systems, political systems, government systems, legal systems, judicial systems, business systems will change as those worldviews change, because the current systems will not fit the new worldview. So what will they be like? And we can, again, through research and policy analysis, we can say building those, and I'll give some examples later of some of the things we're already doing, getting underway. And then, as I mentioned earlier, a very important component of who we are is embodying and reflecting the principles and processes of peace. Okay, our main MO, our modus operandi, is as a networked organization. There are over, as I mentioned earlier, there are over 400 peace and conflict studies programs, peace and justice studies programs at colleges and universities all over the world, over 400. There are organizations like the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington and other organizations in countries all over the world that are doing analysis and research and education in peace and what that means. We don't want to reinvent any wheels. We don't want to duplicate. We don't want to compete. We're not about competing and being just another one of those or just another one of those. We want to add value to what's already there and work collaboratively through co-creation, not duplicating, and working with and through those existing programs and organizations and through new ones as they emerge. And there will be new ones. There's new ones all the time. And so we want to work as part of networking with those organizations and those programs and add value to what they are doing and do something synergistically together that we maybe can't do alone. And this is all levels of civil society, business, and government. Another dream, which we've had some positive response for, is to actually work collaboratively with the military on training people to be peacemakers and peace builders. The soldiers in the field are being asked to do this increasingly, and they don't have a clue. They aren't trained for that. And so a couple of the people we've talked with in the military, I mean, they're very excited about this prospect of working with them to kind of help them get those skills to do some of the things they're being asked to do. All right, so what's going on now already, progress that's underway and on the horizon? I divided these into programmatic areas and organizational areas, and the programmatic with respect to development of the peace builder. Let me stand over here so I can look at this. With respect to development of the peace builder, we're working with Case Western Reserve University, which is where we had our design summit last March. And because of that proximity, and they know us and so on, there's been a lot of interest in working with us, actually getting programs going. And they have a new strategic alliance, a system of strategic alliances across the campus. Their new president has instituted this. And two of those are in social justice and ethics. These are transdisciplinary programs that cut across all the 8 schools of the campus. In social justice and ethics, and then they have other ones on environmental issues, ecology, and so on. So we've been talking with the people who are doing the social justice program and the Ethics Alliance, and adding a third corner to that and having a triangle, social justice, ethics, and peace. And we would, the National Peace Academy, would provide that third corner and work together on that in this transdisciplinary way across the Case campus. So we're just in conversation with that, and that's something that they're very keen on, and we are also. Wilmington College in southwestern Ohio, when they heard about us, they're very, very excited about. There's a peace resource center at that college, and they want to work with us, and came forward to say, let's have a summer peace building institute next summer. So we're working with them on that. So yes, let's do that. It'd be a 1-week long program, and we're just beginning to put that together and who would be invited and so on. And that would be at Wilmington College in Ohio next summer. There's a possibility of it in conversation with somebody at the University of Washington who would like very much to do a course about war and health, the health impacts of war. This is somebody associated with the Physicians for Social Responsibility. And so there's a possibility of working with him to offer a course on war and health. What is that saying? I think I have it on my keychain. War is not healthy for children and other living things. Remember that? I actually found that. I put it on a keychain. Still around. University for Peace in Costa Rica. We just came back from Costa Rica a few weeks ago from the Global Alliance Summit down there we had. And we visited with the rector of the university, and he was very keen also on working with us in this collaborative way and developing some urban studies programs in collaboration with Case Western and so on. So we're pursuing that avenue. And possibly, of course, the Rainbow Global Health Children's Clinic at Case. Case has a very large medical school and clinic system. And this program, the Rainbow Global Health Clinic for Children, they did a survey recently of some of the poor communities in Cleveland, and there are many of them. Cleveland has some of the most serious problems in this country with respect to foreclosure rates and poverty and racial issues and crime issues and violence issues. It's really something. And they did a survey in some of these poor areas and asking people, what are the health issues that you really see that you need? Because they got a $20 million grant to do something for health in these communities, and they wanted to know what's really needed out there. And they thought they would get things back like, well, we got a lot to deal with stress or, you know, heart issues, cardiac issues, or things like that. What came back was, why are our 14-year-old boys being killed in the streets? So we're looking at violence as a health issue, which it is. Centers for Disease Control has a whole department on violence prevention. The World Health Organization has a whole department on violence prevention as a real serious health issue. So we're in conversation with them about a course on developing humanitarian peace builders in Cleveland. On the peace system side of things, that was peace builder. On the peace system side of things, we have a program we're starting in Cleveland, and we're working with organizing many of the elements in the community, peace educators, people with the city of Cleveland, people in the Cleveland schools, community activists, and so on, to create a safe, healthy, and sustainable Cleveland. And this is very much in line with the program at the state government level, too, for recognizing that you're not going to have safe schools unless you have safe and healthy schools without safe and healthy communities. So it's how do you do that? And so we're looking at this community-wide effort, organizational effort to do that. So we're just getting underway with that. The International Institute on Peace Education is something that's been going on for 27 years. It's every year they have like an institute of about 60, 65 people come and have like a week-long of intensive. These are peace educators. It's oriented towards building community among peace educators and skills and sharing skills across nations internationally. A few years ago, the community-based institutes on peace education began where they're saying, well, when these people go home from these international institutes, how can they start something in their local areas? There was some desire for that. So there are many countries around the world now, not in the United States yet, we're hoping this Cleveland project will be one for the United States, which have these community-based. So you look at the community level and bring peace educators around the community as an ongoing thing within the community to bring peace education, to build peace within the community. So these programs that have been around for a while have now been come under the wing of the National Peace Academy as sort of steward for those programs. So that's next summer's International Institute will be in Colombia, which happens to be one of the most advanced countries with community-based institutes. They have five of those around Colombia, and they certainly need it there. And so our next institute will be there in Colombia. We have another project proposal out now for grant funding for environmental scan of peace education policy. It's at the state, local level, federal level. Policies have been put into place to promote peace education in the schools, K through 12. What is the actual effect of those policies? Are they actually being implemented? How effective are they? Maybe they're not being implemented the way they're intended. So what is the gap there? And then once we understand that gap, we can say what needs to be done. And then I mentioned this earlier, the network of peace academies throughout the world. And the Global Alliance for Ministries and Departments of Peace, which I'll talk about in a minute, at their recent summit in Costa Rica, decided to expand their scope from cabinet-level ministries and departments of peace to actually talk about promoting peace academies in countries around the world. So on the organizational front, we're in conversation with Case Western Reserve about having headquarters office there. They very much have indicated they would like to do that, so we're trying to find the space on campus to open a headquarters office there. We're not part of CASE. We're not limited to Ohio or Cleveland, but that's where we're starting, and so it makes sense that we would do that. And we have possibility of program offices as we develop programs elsewhere around the country, have program offices to manage those programs there. And we're in conversation in New York City, and an organization down in Santa Barbara would like to have one in California. Our education director, Tony Jenkins, came on board following the summit in March, and he's just dynamo. He's just so wonderful to have that kind of talent behind us in developing the programs. When we talk about developing the programs, he's the one doing it with the rest of us on the core team and reaching out and establishing partnerships elsewhere. National Peace Academy Library, we're beginning to get Dr. Pat Mishi is donating a set of books from the Global Education Association to start our library, and so we'll have that. And Linda, it'll be a physical as well as a virtual library, but we're getting started. And others have indicated interest in donating some of their books and their archives and so on. Now this is a place called the National Peace Academy. They're seeing this opportunity as a place, as a repository for some of their life's work. Oops. Taking steps to incorporate. Yes, we're not yet incorporated. We have a fiscal sponsor, but we are drawing up articles of incorporation, bylaws, and going through that sort of drill, and we'll probably be incorporating in Ohio since that's where most of our work is initially. All right. Now I wanted to go into a little bit of more on the how are we doing? Okay. On the Global Alliance, on the peace systems side, we see that our involvement with that is relative to our peace systems area. So the Global Alliance is a worldwide grassroots community of activists, and government officials are also part of it. Over 40 countries now, nearly around 40 countries now are part of it, are active in it, and on every continent except Antarctica. We don't have the penguins yet involved, but we're working on that. And they're calling for structures in government to support a culture of peace, specifically ministries and departments of peace, cabinet-level agencies, but not necessarily. They could be at all levels, state and local, or provincial and local, depending on the country, as well as at the national level, and peace academies are part of that structure to support a culture of peace. In the United States, there's legislation in Congress, and there has been since 2001, introduced by Congressman Kucinich, to create a cabinet-level Department of Peace in our government, in this country. And there's an organization called the Peace Alliance, which I used to work for, Nancy works for, that is coordinating a nationwide grassroots campaign that's in all 50 states now of activists, such as Nancy here, who are campaigning locally, lobbying their congressmen to support this bill. Currently, there's over 70 congressmen have signed on as co-sponsors in the House. There's not currently a Senate bill there yet. But the Peace Alliance is coordinating that, and that's what's happening in this country. And there are campaigns in many other countries as well calling for such cabinet-level departments. A bill was introduced in the Canadian Parliament a couple weeks ago that would create a cabinet-level Department of Peace in the Canadian government. Three countries already have them. Solomon Islands, Nepal, and last month Costa Rica joined them. So that's three. So once you have three, there's a trend there, right? Solomon Islands, I'm not sure when that started. I think it was about 10 years ago or so as a solution. They had a period of ethnic conflict, and that was part of their solution to that. Nepal started 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. The Nepal Ministry, they call it the Ministry of Peace and Reconstruction, or the Ministry of Reconstruction and Peace, something like that. And that was started as part of the peace pact that brought an end to 10 years of Maoist rebellion and political turmoil in the country, ended up ousting the king. And part of the pact that brought peace and ended that 10-year rebellion insurrection was that there would be a ministry of peace in the country, and there is now. That was 2.5 years ago, now Costa Rica, so maybe it'll accelerate and we'll get some more coming on. Now, what can a ministry or department do? I say ministry and departments. In our country, we call them departments, and most other countries are called ministries. Seeing peace as an integrated whole. There's some place in government whose job it is to look at peace and to look at the wholeness of it, not just international, not just domestic, not just, you know, there's programs all over our government that are trying to deal with violence in our schools, in our streets, gang violence in the Justice Department, Education Department, State Department as far as foreign things. But there's nowhere that looks at peace as a whole, as an integrated way. And making it a priority for government to have a cabinet-level person there sitting at the cabinet table, you know, bringing that up all the time when there's conflict brewing, domestic or foreign, to bring those options to the table. And to make it an organizing principle in our society and our government. If peace is that priority, we're going to organize and do things very differently than we do them now. And to partner with civil society and business. Government can't do it alone. Everybody has to be involved. Peace is everybody's business. I often say peace is not a special interest. The Peace Alliance that does the campaign for Department of Peace is not a special interest in their lobbying. Peace is everybody's business. That's a general interest. All right, we've had four summits so far. The first one was in 4 years ago already, in October of 2005. 40 people from 12 countries attended that very first summit in London. In Canada, 8 months later, we had 60 people from 18 countries attend. In Japan, 2 years ago, we had 50 people from 21 countries attending. And last month in Costa Rica, we had 100 people from 21 countries attending. And Costa Rica's was the first one officially hosted by the host government, the government of Costa Rica. And Oscar Arias's government agreed to actually be the official host. President Arias spoke at the opening ceremony. And it was quite an advance for the Global Alliance to get to that stage. So we're there. About ministries and departments of peace, Archbishop Desmond Tutu said in his own inimical way, in his own way that cannot be copied. It's an extraordinary idea, and it fills one with a great deal of excitement and exhilaration. He said this in May of 2006. And so I say, go for it. This is marvelous. Go for it. And one day we'll ask, why were we so stupid for so long because of something so obvious? Now, what was in some of these diarises, some of the blanks I left there? He was saying something like, it's a crazy idea. Let's get crazy. Let's do it. The Dalai Lama, and again in September 2006, said the proposal that there should be a ministry of peace within governments is not merely admirable, but if implemented would represent a serious indication of actual intent. I'm happy to give my support to such a body whose responsibilities would include being a consistent voice for nonviolent means of settling disputes. And he sent a special letter to the summit last month in Costa Rica also, in which he said, peace in the world thus depends on there being peace in the hearts of individuals. Peace based merely on political considerations or prompted by other compulsions will only be temporary and superficial. I believe we should take every opportunity to create harmony wherever we can, and that this summit can make a significant contribution in this direction. And finally, President Arias said in his speech opening up the summit, said the task is only just beginning. He had just signed that same earlier that week, the legislation creating the Ministry of Justice and Peace in Costa Rica. The creation of a ministry for peace is not the final achievement, merely the making of a road to achieve sustainable order that would allow resolution of human conflicts without violence. So it's just a beginning. All right, so in conclusion, we still struggle with a culture of, I think we'll recognize this, a culture of violence between and within countries. Certainly a lot of violence here. This child yesterday was doused with gasoline in Florida and burned because he caught some other kids stealing his dad's bike. School shootings, all these, you know, Columbine, Blacksburg, this is going on. So it's still there, the culture of violence. And where does that come from? And if you want to stay afterwards, we can talk about that too. I have some more extra slides here on that. But there's also much peace in the world. There's a lot going on. We know how to do it. We know how to get at the root cause of those violence. We know how to build more peace. And the choice is ours. We just have to make the personal and the collective will to actually put the resources into doing it, including our own personal time and attention into doing it for our future generations. So academies of peace and ministries and departments of peace around the world will bring us a quantum leap closer to a culture of peace. But we have to be working with government, civil society, business, everybody together doing that. Okay, so for the Q&A part of this, it's two-way, all right? You're going to read your thing? Does that look fine? Okay. It's two-way. It's a two-way thing, okay? So you can ask your questions, but I also have some questions up here that you want to, if you want to think about and comment on, you can feel free to do that, okay? So the first one is, what courses or curricula would you recommend for the National Peace Academy? What areas of research would you recommend the National Peace Academy undertake? Who would you suggest as possible program partners? Remember, we work with and through existing organizations and people and emerging ones. Who are some of those you think they should be? And finally, earlier, remember I said wholeness created by right relationships as the definition of peace? That's a big question there. What are those right relationships? What does that mean? I'm sure there might be some differences of opinion, different ideas, but that's really critical. And so that's, so you can think about those questions, comment on those, or ask any other questions you would like. And
before we get started, I am Karen Kiefer, a member of the club's International Relations Member-Led Forum. And at this time, we'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to, finally, a National Peace Academy with Dr. Michael Abkin. Okay, at this time, Dr. Abkin will take questions. I'd like to ask the first one, since I'm chair, and that is, if there is a Department of Peace, would the National Peace Academy come under it, and how does it differ from the U.S. Institute of Peace in regard to research, et cetera?
Good question. I didn't plant that in you either. The bill that's before Congress now that Congressman Kucinich has introduced, and there have been bills before. He didn't start this in 2001. There have been bills before. It just hasn't happened yet. His was the first to include domestic programs in the definition of peace. Previously, peace meant international, and people were looking at international peace. And he looks at, in the Department of Peace legislation now, he looks at domestic. And that legislation does call for the Department of Peace, when it's created, that department shall establish a peace academy. This program that we're doing here is not governmental. The program in the 1970s, I think, John, you were part of that. In the 1970s, there was a large nationwide campaign for the government to establish a National Peace Academy. Actually, that had grown out of some legislation in 1969 by Senator Vance Hartke that would create a Department of Peace. That quickly morphed into a campaign for a National Peace Academy that went throughout most of the 70s and ended up with the U.S. Institute of Peace, which was created by government. This initiative that we have now for the National Peace Academy was started within the private sector by NGOs, nonprofits working with, and we happen to be in conversation with people at Case Western Reserve University. In, by the way, the business school, the Weatherhead School of Management, has within it a center for business as an agent of world benefit. We were talking with them, and this idea of a peace academy came out. And so this initiative started from there, the current initiative started from there. And so we get our funding from private donors, from grants, foundation grants. And at some point, I'm sure if we work with the government collaboratively, whether it's the military or any other part of the government, we'll be getting government contracts, government grants as well. As the Department of Peace legislation works its way through Congress, as it gets heard in the committees and it's marked up in the committees and changed, I'm sure that currently it calls for that the Department of Peace shall establish a peace academy. That may change, I don't know. Based on the reality of what's out there at the time, as that works its way through Congress, that may change. We'll see what happens. Or they may feel there's something that's not being done that they still need to do, and it'll cover that.
Great program. Why didn't we think about this long ago? I would like to comment something about the first question, what courses would you recommend for National Peace Academy? Well, I think that it would be, just my opinion, it would be good to start with tolerance among people from all over the world, just like here in San Francisco, that we are people from all over the world. We are enriching ourselves with the culture, with the food, with the different kinds of people, their way they dress. Instead of just criticizing, I think we are enriching ourselves. And languages, everything is wonderful. So it's that tolerance will be the main subject.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's so delightful to hear of this academy developing. And I'm wondering if a natural partner with you, I wonder if you have explored a possible partner in my fellow returned Peace Corps volunteers who are a considerable number around the globe, and I know there are several here tonight. I, as a returned Peace Corps volunteer, have emailed Barack 3 times, once during his campaign and a couple times later, with the suggestion that over 8 years he might work on reversing the numbers in the military with the numbers of people serving in the Peace Corps. And that might be a long-term goal.
Okay, thank you. I love that. As a returned Peace Corps volunteer myself, I thought that would be wonderful. Yes, thank you.
You mentioned the efforts 3 decades ago for National Peace Academy. I think at one time, considering that there were so many military academies, there was some thought that a peace academy should train maybe diplomats for the Foreign Service. And so the question 30 years later, did you see anything like that? And as far as the courses go, would these be short-term courses? Would they be long? Would the students be in for degrees or what?
All of the above, I would say. We'll see how it evolves. The Summer Peace Building Institute next summer will be a week long, very intensive short course. The course on war and peace at University of Washington would probably be like a semester course. And one thing I didn't have up here, Case Western has asked us, which we might do next fall, next year. Case Western has a series that they call SAGES, which I forgot what it stands for, but it's their general education courses that every undergraduate has to take. And it isn't just a single course here and there. It's something that they take throughout. There are certain courses in the freshman year, sophomore year, all the way up to senior year they have to do. And they very much encourage creativity and transdisciplinary approaches in these courses. It can be very different than any other course that's taught on campus. And they've invited us to come up with 1 or 2 courses like that we might teach and get into their program. I can see this developing as we get experience with this into where we have actual curricula degrees. We might give a joint degree with a university like, Berkeley or Case Western or University of Washington, have a whole program that leads to a degree. We grant dual degrees. We aren't currently looking at necessarily being accredited ourselves. We don't have a campus. We don't, that may come someday when we get to that point. But working cooperatively in partnership with existing accredited institutions, we could certainly offer certificate programs, degree programs, that kind of thing. So we'll see how that evolves. There's room for that.
If there is a Department of Peace at the cabinet level, I can certainly imagine how it would address various foreign policy issues. But how do you see it domestically? What kind of involvement might it have in domestic questions?
There's a great deal of violence in our culture. Gang violence, school violence, domestic violence. What do they say that probably the number one cause of injuries to policemen, peace officers, is domestic violence call, answering domestic violence calls? Fatalities? So, and there are programs that do this in various other departments, but we don't have that focus. So I think that what the a cabinet-level Secretary of Peace sitting at the cabinet table when these issues come up can provide visibility to that need for addressing violence at the root cause. A lot of the programs out there now are like symptomatic relief. Very few of them actually address root cause. So it's, you do the research, you find out what it is that can be done at the level of root cause and provide policy proposals and put those forward at the cabinet. And then they might be actually implemented in other departments, and it's focusing resources on these programs as well. And then working with the state and local levels as well to encourage, promote, provide information on these opportunities that are there for getting at the root cause of violence. Our foreign policy, peace is so much more than foreign policy. What we project in our foreign policy and our foreign relations comes from who we are at home. If we are a violent society at home, that's what we project. That's what we do. And we're not going to change that, without changing this also.
Very enjoyable. Pleasure to be here. We're talking about the international arena, suggestions for courses, curricula, possibly conflict resolution, dispute resolution, mediation, arbitration. Some of these ideas or courses probably that diplomats even take, the ones at the State Department. In fact, that could be who we could partner with. Just some ideas. Yeah.
Have to be recorded. Finish.
Oh, yeah, just one last thing. Is this only about peace with other civilizations or cultures, or does it also involve peace with the earth?
Yes, definitely. Let me ask the first part of it. As I mentioned, there are over 400 programs all over the world on college and university campuses in peace and conflict studies and conflict resolution, mediation. That's all part of it. And we can certainly partner with them and try and bring that to another level of visibility, so it gets around more even. And that's certainly something we can do. I appreciate that recommendation. This is what we're looking at as the definition of peace. And it's peace at all those levels, including with the earth, including with this everything that we are a part of. And that we're not going to have peace without that. People often say, well, global climate change, that's our biggest issue right now, or ecological sustainability. To me, sustainability and peace are two sides of the same coin. You aren't going to have one without the other. The issue of climate change is such a critical. I think last year the CIA came out with a national security assessment saying that, probably the greatest challenge to our national security was climate change. And I haven't seen that picked up yet. I've asked some of our politicians at meetings when I've seen them, and they just sort of shunt the question aside. But what can we do as a nation? There are going to be inevitable population movements because of this climate change. The locale, the quantity, and the locations of arable land, potable water, livable climates is going to change. People are going to move, and national boundaries are meaningless in that. Currently what we call borders are meaningless in that. So even within borders. So as people move, how are we going to resolve the inevitable conflicts nonviolently? So we can learn to live together, to know this is really a world of abundance if we share and work cooperatively and not in competition, which is really the real message of evolution, is that it's evolution progresses through cooperation, not through competition. And how can we do that, adjust to those shifts nonviolently? And nobody's really looking at that. That's a very critical issue.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. This is enlightening. One hopes that it embraces more of the world as you progress with your development of the National Peace Academy. And I also thank very much the person who brought up and you developed the idea of peace on the earth. That is to say, our sustainability and our right relationship with the earth itself, and that the idea of violence really needs to be ensconced with the idea of peace, that it's unrealistic not to think that when we pollute our environment, we are obviously committing acts of violence. And a whole module on earth violence, I think, could be part of whatever discussion you develop now. The four questions that we were asked, the first on coursework, and I'm sure that you're aware of the Nonviolent Peace Force and the coursework that it entails when it goes to Nepal to act as non-biased observers, simply to allow a peace process to, I think their module is definitely worth emulating, definitely worth considering. As far as research, I would say the history of war and how to somehow avoid planting the seeds that create wars, that this is really a large philosophical campaign that could very well be part of that. And the third question, what was that? Oh, yes, partners. Obviously, international partners, and very much I love the idea of the military. Somehow that being transmogrified into what has already been happening in Afghanistan. Army Corps of Engineers has been very involved in helping other countries, in listening to them, allowing them to create democratic contracts on their own, so that we are not Halliburtoning it around the world, but are actually stepping aside and allowing democratic and contractual actions to take place in people rebuilding their countries. And the last, the idea of right relationship, is, of course, inherent respect for all of us, the earth, and each other. And thank you very much. I'm sorry, that's not really a question. It's more a comment. But you asked for that, right. But thank you very much for coming. Very much appreciate these ideas. Thank you.
Thank you. Gosh, there's so much I wanted to comment on what you said. I was very pleased yesterday. I mean, for a long time, people have said, and we've worked with someone called the 3D Initiative about development, diplomacy, and defense, trying to redress the balance. And I was very pleased to hear on the news this morning that the Obama administration is having a serious look at USAID and how they operate and wanting to redress that balance and put more emphasis on diplomacy and development and to rebalance that overemphasis we've had on defense.
If I may, I guess I would like to address, if I might, your first question on curricula. And I would like to bring it back to a national level. And perhaps because I come from the educational world, I would like to propose that we look at some of the things you mentioned on looking at multiculturalism and seeing the beauty of our salad bowl culture, and having students and children see that they are beautiful, each in his or her own way, because once the child, adolescent, feels grounded in pride of who he or she is and roots and where they come from, they can then, that's relationship with self. Then the next part is reaching out and having appropriate relationships with others in a non-accusatory, and that's where I think your mediation, conflict resolution, and the whole peer mediation movement that's happening in schools with an emphasis on anti-bullying, but more positively, how to avoid physical confrontations.
That was said very positively. That's something I wanted to... Were you finished? I don't want to interrupt.
And you talked about partnerships. I think the National Education Association, the Association of National parents and teachers, the National Association of Superintendents of Schools, National Association of Administrators and Supervisors, and certainly teachers' unions.
The issue of, I think it's very, very important to look at peace in all its dimensions. There's something called negative peace and positive peace. Negative peace doesn't mean bad, but it means peace as defined by the absence of something, the absence of violence, the absence of war. Peace is when we don't have war. Peace is when we don't have violence. And that is definitely true, and that is a side of peace. There's also something called positive peace. How do you see peace out there as something that's present, something that's in the world, those right relationships? How do you observe, measure, if you can, those right relationships on the positive peace side? And what tools, what skills can we learn that would help us on both the negative peace, to deal with the negative peace issues as well as the positive peace issues? Things like conflict resolution, you have a conflict going, well, that's another distinction to make, is that we don't necessarily say there's never going to be any conflict. Conflict gets things done. It gets people moving. It's like potential difference in a physics sense. It causes things to happen. But they don't have to be dealt with violently. That's the difference. Conflicts don't have to be violent. And we know how to have nonviolent resolution of conflicts. So there's going to be conflicts, and the question is, how do we resolve them through mediation, through conflict resolution procedures to resolve those? And I sort of put that in a category of this is how we deal with on the negative peace side, which is important and critical. On the positive peace side, how do we, like you're saying, you got to get even, we talked about K through 12. You got to get before that, preschool, in the families, in the womb, I don't know. Kids are learning all the time. And what they hear around them, wherever they are, gets imprinted, enculturated in them. And that's really critical. Where was I going with that? So for positive social and emotional learning, things like that, what those right relationships, you mentioned tolerance, and even more than tolerance. I mean, I wouldn't want to say people are just tolerating me. That's like a minimal. I want people to love me. How can you do that? So those kinds of things are on the positive peace side, and we need both of those. Okay.
Unfortunately, we've reached this time in the program where we have time for only one last question.
Is it you? That's very sweet. Unless there's somebody else. This is really a question. And, of course, thank you very much for the roots of peace have to be found, in the environment of a child, I think. But aside from that, what about law? The ICC has still not been accepted through the United States. We have not yet signed on to that. In order for there to be peace and in order for that mandate of peace to be accepted as a mandate of the United States as well, don't we have to sign on to some of these treaties that demand that everyone is equal under law?
Definitely, for sure. And what's keeping us from signing on? You have to look back. What is in our national worldview, if you will, our national culture, that is preventing us from signing on to those? And I think, as His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, those treaties and governments and government agencies are not enough. Peace has to come from our own relationships, and then we can project that. If we look at the world, if we look at these right relationships and these treaties that try to put into law these right relationships, and if we see within our own culture the importance of those relationships, then we will sign those treaties. I definitely that has to be done. And it's a two-way street. We talk about rights and human rights, and that's critical what those human rights are and embodying them into law. But there's also responsibilities that we don't hear a lot of talk about. Do we need a Bill of Responsibilities in our Constitution? Do we need a Universal Declaration of Human Responsibilities? I remember a personal story. About 10, 12 years ago, there used to be a series of the State of the World Forums here in San Francisco. Did any of you remember those? And one of them started out with some indigenous people from around the world in Grace Cathedral talking about what the northern cultures were doing to the rainforests and the indigenous cultures, and it was very moving. And leaving from Grace Cathedral to go to the sessions across the way in the Fairmont Hotel, I mean, I was moved. I didn't even want to leave. I'm just sort of walking across, out of the cathedral, across the floor there. And so other people also, and there was a woman there who was also walking out. And she was also, like, dazed. And so we just sort of hugged each other. I didn't know who she was. She didn't know who I was. We just sort of needed that. And so I was thinking afterward, I said, well, you know, we need another one of these, another article in the Declaration of Human Rights, that every man, woman, and child in the world has a right to a hug when needed. And then in the Declaration of Responsibilities, every man, woman, and child has a responsibility to give a hug when somebody needs it. So, now I have some more things to talk. If you want to talk about the whole idea of worldview and cultures of violence and cultures of peace, even the history of the National Peace Academy, some of that history and departments and ministries of peace, I'm willing to stay after and do that if you like.
Well, first of all, come here. I'm a hugger. Thank you. In fact, there's a 3-hug minimum daily requirement that I understand somebody said. Our thanks to Dr. Michael Abkin for his so informative, interesting, hopeful, and inspirational talk this evening. Thank you. We also thank our audiences here as well as our radio audience. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating over 106 years, is now adjourned.